Resonance Rewind with Robin Pierce, Jessica Burtis, Jenny Bill, and every so often some delightful guests from the cosmos.
Be kind. Resonance Rewind.
In the year 1868, the shipping world was alarmed by rumors of an avenging monster on the loose. A series of strange events befell certain vessels cruising the great South Seas, and travel along this nightmare sea lane dwindled to a few bold ships. Are these simply alarming rumors, or is it time for another episode of Resonance Rewind? So, directed by Richard Fleischer, and we've just been listening to the music of Paul Smith, of course, for the visionary Walt Disney, who was the 20th century version of Jules Verne's incarnation of 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. We yes. have a fabulous hextet of quality to actually debate this whole thing, including one newbie to Resonance Rewind. That's the wonderful Philip Herdwood. And in addition to that, we've got, of course, Jenny Bill, the return of...
Hiya, guys.
Pamela Suman and Robin Pierce. Robin, it's over to you, good self. A quick précis, please, before we start analysing this Nautilus adventure in detail.
Well, as if this, possibly the first steampunk adventure, needs any introduction. We are in the late 1860s. The oceans are not safe. Ships are being lost to a mysterious sea monster. Now, the US Navy send out a ship with recently sort of volunteered naturalist Professor Aronnax, his assistant Conseil, and master harpoonist Ned Land to seek for this creature, which the Navy will not officially confirm exists. Witnessing a ship being sunk as they're about to quit and go home after several months at sea, the monster turns and attacks them. The ship is crippled, but our three stalwart heroes are left bobbing around, holding on for dear life to Jetsam and Flotsam. Well, they find that the monster is not really a monster after all. It is a unique submarine boat capable of going under the sea. Its master is the mysterious and enigmatic Captain Nemo, who is at war with that hated nation, which he never actually specifies which it is. And he has been basically sinking munitions ships. Our three stalwarts join him on a series of adventures, which will take them not only to an island inhabited by cannibals, not only to an encounter with a giant squid, but also 20,000 leagues under the sea.
Jessica, would you like to share with us, is this the first time you've encountered the 1954 edition of what is now celebrating its 150th anniversary since it was first published back in the 19th century? It's 150 years since 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea was first published by Jules Verne.
That's amazing. Yeah, I've never seen this film. I had read in third grade when I was 8, I had read like a child's version of the book and it like scarred me, but this was actually really fun. I love the narration. I actually wrote down my notes. My brain is still kind of fuzzy, so I got it all organized here. But it was very reminiscent of The Time Machine, and I loved the whole like man versus nature thing. I loved how it kind of highlighted like man's fascination with sea monsters and the unknown, and how oceans and water itself is often used as like a metaphor. And I think like that initial scene where they see that burial at sea underwater is so kind of evocative of that. And it was also very emotional, a bit more than I expected, like when Captain Nemo kind of he kind of died gazing out at like the underwater world that he had devoted his life to, and how like the Nautilus itself kind of had this like underwater burial. Like it was just, it was very very well done. I really enjoyed it.
Some interesting points there. It does actually feature, according to a note that Jenny Bill sent me, two of her least favorite actors. I don't quite know what Kirk Douglas has ever done to actually merit that, but I suspect it's more Peter Lorre and his unique take.
No, I love Sway. Peter Lorre.
He was wonderful.
No, he's the best.
So, Jenny, what about your thoughts on 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea?
Yeah, I have to say it's actually James Mason and Kirk Douglas that I'm not particularly keen on, although I think James Mason was excellent. He was excellent in this. And yeah, of course, I have seen it before. I have not seen it for a very long time. And I realize how typical the music and the style of the film is of the sort of 40s and early 50s. Sort of everything is almost overdone. But I think it suits the environment because, of course, the underwater makes everything very peaceful and seems to slow it all down. Yeah, I think the music, the whole film, you could tell the bits that were done in the studios, and I could see one or two little bits that were dubbed. But I think overall it's a masterpiece. I still have not seen it for a long time, and I know I used to love it, and I still thought it was great. And it didn't look as dated in the special effects as obviously the film is. I mean, the film's even older than me, so that's saying something about it. And yeah, I think it stood the test of time really, really well. A great package.
One was very tempted to actually go back to the original 1916 version of 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, which also had some underwater photography in, and actually had some interesting shots. It does tend to conflate both 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea and Mysterious Island. Okay, let's turn to New York. Let's go to America. Pamela Suman, your thoughts on this one before we actually hear your particular inspired number on this, and then I'll go to Philip Herdwood and Tessa Snart. But what are your thoughts on this Walt Disney epic, which actually features both Minnie and Daisy? Yes, Minnie Mouse and Daisy Duck, or are they the only two female characters that we actually see accompanying the Ned Land before he goes into his first fisticuff session and, of course, breaks into a whale of a tale?
Well, I really was wondering if I should get all woke, you know, about it, but I'm not going to do that. So the only, you know, we won't talk about the only two female characters in there. So I have to say that I remember, you know, because we used to go to Disney World, and I remember 20,000 Leagues was so fantastic. And then I read the book a few years ago. I think, again, maybe I had read it years ago. And I love the book. Love the book. And I mean, overall, as a thing, as a spectacle, I love the movie. I think the steampunk elements, I mean, that submarine or underwater device, I really want to live there. It's pretty amazing. But you know, something kept coming back to me, and please forgive me for this, but I have to be honest. Hokey. The music is hokey. And Kirk Douglas, always liked him and always remembered him as a serious actor with that fantastic chin dimple. And he was like trying to be a bit like Danny Kaye, I guess that was a thing. And he's very talented, and he must have drank a lot of coffee while he did that. But and I loved Peter Lorre. He was just so adorable. But overall, and you know, it was a thing. So it got better. It got more watchable as it got deep. It went deeper, you know, no pun intended. But there was just so much hokiness in it. I think I like the mustaches the best.
Yeah, there were an awful lot of mustaches around, a lot of facial hair. In fact, it was only Kirk Douglas and Constance who seemed to have an absence of facial hair, and of course the first mate on the submarine. You could argue that actually the Nautilus herself might have been female. And of course there is the classic Esmeralda, of course responsible, in addition to the movie that wasn't in the original novel. And what's not to love about Esmeralda? And thank the Lord she actually survived to actually sort of lead to a whole variety of other aspects as well. Before we go to Breath or Breathe, Breath, I think, your choice from your own oeuvre, simply from the point of view of underwater breathing, perhaps?
It just was the first thing that came to mind. It was probably just me being silly, thinking that it was underwater, and what a song but Breathe. But you could argue that it's, you know, it's about new worlds and how you, you know, just breathe. Don't say a word, just breathe. You know, it's more tongue-in-cheek than anything, Alex, for this one. But
a little bit of hokiness, but, you know, it's worthwhile from that point of view alone, as indeed some of the acting sort of tends to vary slightly. Although, again, it's well delivered and well put forward. Let's hear Breathe.
Before I could make this go, it's like I died and I am where I want to go. You could pray for the future, or you could pray to the past. But there's nothing like the present, and it's never gonna last. Why don't you breathe, don't say a word, be whatever you feel. Breathe, don't say a word, just breathe. This could be your savior, oh, this could be your demise. What will it be? Through the night, breathe, don't say a word, be whatever you feel. Breathe, don't say a word, just be whatever. Breathe, don't say a word, be whatever you feel. Spirit.
And we're back now with Philip Herdwood. Philip, I believe you've even experienced the official ride in either Disneyland Paris or indeed in America. And what are your thoughts on 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea?
Not what is called a civilized man, Alexius. I've done with society for reasons that seem good to me. Therefore, I do not obey its laws. As close as I can get. No, I didn't remember that Kirk Douglas was in the film, of course. But, you know, in the end, you know, I was on the side of the squid, to be honest with you. I really do. I mean, I felt for that squid. I felt its pain. But no, I did go on the walkthrough. It's called a walkthrough, I think, that kind of attraction. And it was Disneyland Paris. And it was absolutely brilliant. And like Pamela, I really wanted to live there. I just thought, is this the birth of steampunk? And some years later, of course, steampunk was there in front of us. So I went out and bought a waistcoat, a steampunk waistcoat, I have to hasten to add. But yeah, I thought it was really good. I mean, it was a great film, wasn't it? I mean, it's kind of over the top, isn't it? And it's a big adventure and it's exciting and it's all the thrills and spills of the goodies and the baddies and people with a few layers, which of course Nemo has in the end. You know, he has layers. He's got a conscience. He's got, you know, commitments to what he's doing. I thought it was great. I loved it, you know. But yeah, so
not so much.
Peter Lorre always adds extra spook to every film he's in, doesn't he? You know, it's always like he's got such an amazing voice. He had. He puts the fear into you before he even opens his mouth. Hey, that face, you know, that kind of evil, mad grin he's got on his face. Anyway, yeah, great stuff.
Not so much a mad scientist, more kind of mad politician, I think Nemo was defined as, in terms of somebody who wanted the best for humanity and then looked at the worst of humanity. As he says himself, what you fail to understand is the power of hate. It can fill the heart as surely as love can.
How contemporary that is.
Indeed.
without getting political.
Absolutely. To which, of course, Professor Aronnax responds, Professor Pierre Aronnax, I'm sorry for you. It's a bitter substitute. Has this tempted you to actually catch this, Tessa, or are you still stepping away from the Disney epic that is 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea?
Definitely not. I actually caught the trailer before we did this feature, and I spoke to my mum and dad because I'm at their house at the moment. And no, I love anything nautical themed, anything under the sea. So it's definitely one that I want to watch for sure now. And I was nicely surprised when Kirk Douglas, you know, was one of the actors in it, because I know the name and it's always nice to have or to know a familiar face. So yeah, definitely. And actually my mum was saying, speaking of theme park rides, my mum was saying that she featured in or on a carnival float that was 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea themed.
Awesome.
And yeah, she was 9 or 10, I think it was in Stevenage, and it was just a street carnival. She thinks it was through the Brownies that she was part of back then, and obviously her costume was all made, and it was all made of strips of tissue paper. She was a monster, and it was all, they were attached to her swimming costume, and it rained that day, so you can imagine the colours were down her costume and all on her skin. But no, it sounds magical and exciting, and definitely a film that I would watch. I'll probably rope mum and dad into it as well, because I know they like the film anyway, so they've seen it.
Disney's first exploration of live action, of course, on the back of his other work and so on. Gary Girani thinks it's a wonderful epic movie. It works on its own sense of things from there. Robin, you've heard what the team think initially about this. Does that echo your whole thing? Is it starting adventure, or is it a little bit more schmaltzy, as Pamela was actually saying, and maybe with Esmeralda and the singing Kirk Douglas, perhaps there are other areas within that?
Well, okay, it's Disney. It's the 1950s. It's bound to be a little bit schmaltzy. I don't think that you can, under any circumstances, apply today's woke culture to it, because it is unusual that it's a film that has no leading lady and no child actors in it. Mm-hmm. But then again, can you actually prove to me that naval vessels of the 1860s actually had women on them? I don't think so, especially on a mission that would be as dangerous as this one. I watch this film annually just before Christmas. It's a ritual for me. The thing is, when I was a child and it was re-released into the cinemas, I avoided seeing it like the plague, because as a kid, I had a very morbid fear, almost a phobia of underwater photography, which to this day, I can't explain. But when it came on television, that's the first time I saw it. And I've really enjoyed, this is one of my favorite adventures. In fact, it's one of my top 10 films of all time. It never gets old. And even, well, you know, I try to be balanced about these things. Much as it is my favorite, there is a scene that bothers me. And the scene that bothers me is when Aronnax, Ned, and Conseil first go onto the submarine. They open that big port window and they see the underwater funeral that's taking place on the seabed. So the seabed, given that we see them jump from the ocean floor into the submarine with a little winch, is no more than about 15 feet from the bottom of the submarine. Had they no concept how close they were to land at that point?
What idiots. That's unforgivable.
That bothers me. That bothers me. But other than that, it's an absolutely flawless film. But then again, I am known to be very nitpicky on these shows.
Right. Well, how about that?
I'm very impressed with the fact that Pamela's actually drawn a sketch which proves that she can actually look at your previous lives and actually see the problem that you might well have in terms of just hearing the words, giant squid astern, sir.
But I was amazed, Robin, when you said something about lowering a wench into the water. I mean, that's what...
That would be a winch. Get your mind out of the gutter, sir. We're not exchanging schoolboy jokes on Facebook Messenger now.
Very true.
Speaking of the squid, if you buy...
Which I do often.
There's the original version of the battle with a squid, which actually takes place at sunset. And it's actually a quite stunning scene. The reason they redid it in a storm was they couldn't effectively conceal the wires holding the squid's arms and waving them around. But it's a beautifully composed sequence. It's a shame it didn't make it.
Wow.
What? One minor sort of issue I do have, again, just referring to your point there, Robin, it's when Professor Aronnax and Consuay first actually discover the Nautilus, after having actually been hanging on to the piece of flotsam from the submarine, their clothes seem to be immaculately dry, just a slight bit of dampness. They sort of dry almost instantaneously. I'm not sure whether they actually have
something there is a brand of clothing that I keep seeing that these young people, these youngsters wear these days, called Stay Dry. I'm wondering if that's what they were.
Hmm. Jessica, let's move back to your good self. You said you'd been traumatized as a child by the original Jules Verne narrative. Again, more of a travelogue in many ways, even if it is a junior version, because Disney clearly had to adjust it. Hollywood obviously had done a version in 1916. There are still echoes that work through that. And as I said, Mysterious Island by Charles Schneer is a wonderful kind of postscript, which kind of shows that maybe Nemo's still with us. And I won't even begin to start talking about League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, which actually demonstrates his other line. But what other sort of highlights did you have from the movie itself from first watch?
So I thought that some parts of it were really funny. Like, I think Ned was he was very funny. He was one of my favorite characters, and I thought that that beautiful organ solo that Captain Nemo did, it reminded me of the Pirates of the Caribbean, and I'm wondering if they were like alluding to this film because like Davy Jones played the organ, and then Ned was like hilariously running from an entire island of cannibals, and Jack Sparrow did the same thing. So I'm like, it was funny seeing those elements. But yeah, I really loved Esmeralda too. I'm so happy she survived.
Yeah, I mean, Esmeralda clearly keeping things going. And I think you're absolutely right, Jessica, because there are a number of areas there, including the burial scene, which is more or less repeated shot for shot by robots in the black hole of 1980, nearly 30 years later.
How did you find that out, Alex?
Because I watched the narratives, Philip.
How did you do that? That's extraordinary. I mean, knowing that, it's just... I'm going to fall off my chair in a minute.
No, well, we could also add, as I'm sure you'd be aware, that effectively... Well,
Maximilian Schell's character in Black Hole is really Nemo in space, isn't he? Except he doesn't want to go 20,000 leagues under the sea. He wants to go in, through, and beyond the black hole.
Exactly. But again, the other aspect, as Pamela rightly identified, is, of course, Bach's Toccata and Fugue, which is the music that Nemo is actually playing. Interesting, in the original text, I think Verne wanted to actually have Nemo as a Polish individual who lost his wife and children in the sort of battle that was actually there. But his editor effectively said no, he vetoed the whole thing because it was too sensitive at the time to actually have a Polish character, so he's actually deemed to be a kind of more of an Asian gentleman. But so it goes. Jenny, what about your own highlights? I mean, you mentioned that normally you're not a fan of James Mason, in terms of say, other areas within that, I mean, clearly the movie stands or falls very much on those four lead characters, or five if you include Esmeralda. Any other sort of aspects that come across from you in terms of the speciality of this movie?
I don't particularly like James Mason, but I sort of forgot it was James Mason, really, because I thought he was excellent. I do love Peter Lorre. Every time he opens his mouth and speaks, or just his face, he doesn't even have to speak. He's absolutely... fantastic. And really for me personally, I could have done without Kirk Douglas. I just thought that character spoilt it for me. I hated all that.
But he is Spartacus.
The guitar playing. I mean, he played it very well, but to me it just spoilt the film because it was just silly. Whereas I felt the rest of it was quite sort of somber and serious and as I said, very sort of dramatic. And then they kept throwing those bits in, which I personally didn't like.
Yeah, I thought that Whale of a Tale was, again, a little bit out of kilter. Directed, of course, by Richard Fleischer, the son of Max Fleischer. And indeed, Max Fleischer was a major competitor to Walt Disney at the time. So there was an argument in terms of what was Walt Disney doing employing his major competitor's son, which is interesting. And of course, Richard Fleischer would also go on to direct a movie called Soylent Green, which we'll be looking at later on in the year. And indeed, I can reveal a special sort of bonus here for listeners of Resonance Rewind and the team, that we've been invited to actually do a special Resonance Rewind on both Soylent Green and Logan's Run for the Being Human University Festival, which will be happening in November. So I'll just put that out there, a little tease ahead from that side of things. Very similar, Robin, to the Cook versus Kirk debate that we actually did last year. So this year,
it's Logan's Run. Very enjoyable that was.
Well, there we are. Pamela, back to yourself again. I mean, we've been listening to some of Paul Jones's music within that. There are, of course, some additional classic lines, such as, well, we'll just throw the polywogs out and drink the grog. Do not at any time attempt to actually drink embalming fluid or anything else that you see specimens brought in. It might sort of give you a sort of slight buzz, but in the same way as the new form of fuel in Britain is ethanol-based, it's not an alcohol. You should not drink it. Anyway, Pamela, thoughts for yourself?
I'll remember that. Would you like my musical thoughts, or would you like me to continue on my tirade? No.
Continue with your tirade, Pamela. Go for it.
Oh, goodness. Well, there was a Sunset Boulevard moment in there, and it was when the organ was playing. And then I was thinking of Max, and then I was thinking of the character Max in Sunset Boulevard. I think it was probably, there was probably no one else in the known universe that had that moment. But I definitely did have that moment with incredible organ. And the I think it was, maybe it was the same place, the same piece that was being played. I think it was it Peter Lorre that was actually playing it, or was it playing it by himself? I don't think that Nemo was playing it at that
point. No, Nemo was actually playing it. And indeed, that organ, emerges. It emerges in Pirates of the Caribbean. And I think the actual organ itself is part of the haunted house of the Disney World scenario. So they've obviously made best use of all of the props that they've got here.
Yes, indeed. And what Jenny was saying about it, definitely, like, those hokey moments, you know, with the song and dance, and it really took away from what was otherwise, I would have really enjoyed it otherwise. And the seal, yes, the seal was the one, I wouldn't call her a femme fatale, but she did steal our hearts, did she not? And I really pray that she was treated well, and that there was no, shenanigans on, I hope that she was treated like a star, that she had her own trailer tank, and that she was fed caviar or whatever seals like these. And maybe if there could be another version of this, she could actually be a Selkie, so she could turn into a woman.
Ooh, now there's a thought. I like.
So, Philip, again, you've heard some of the sort of folk that were there in terms of the other lines from that. We're deeper now than man has been before. Collision course. We had obviously the sort of notion this was 1868 when the whole thing was set. So Lincoln had been assassinated, although we still see Lincoln in line within that. Anything else you'd like to add?
Well, yeah, I mean, when you think, what Nemo's last words to Aronnax, as Nautilus was sinking, and he says something which I think is really kind of resonant today. Oh, that was a good word, resonant. We use resonant a lot, don't we, in critique? Very resonant. And when he says, there is hope for the future, and when the world is ready for a new and better life, all this will someday come to pass. In God's good time. And I think that says everything about the film, doesn't it, really? And about Nemo. I mean, I think that's really important. But, yeah, I'll leave you with that little thought.
And quite clearly, that incarnation, as I said to Robin earlier, always gives me chills when Philip Hurdwood delivers his James Mason. It's outstanding.
Yes, shivers is probably the right expression. Thank you. We'll let you know, love. Yes.
Tessa, anything you'd like to add or question the team on before we actually start beginning to collate together scores on the doors and so on?
Scores on the doors?
Gosh, I don't know. I mean, I've been taking it all in. I've been listening. You talk about this seal, because I was a bit confused, because I don't think I saw a seal in the trailer. I saw the squid, the giant squid. So what is the seal all about, or is this a joke? I was trying to follow.
The seal, and let's just hope that actually the cigars that the seal was actually eating were made of seaweed and not actually sort of general smoking cigars. I noticed that on Disney Plus, there is actually a caveat saying that tobacco products are actually listed within this particular motion picture, presuming that seaweed cigars, which I must admit I've never actually partaken of. But I think the seal was really Nemo's pet in many ways, who became by default a kind of good friend of Ned Land and associate of the whole sequence, and actually sort of after initially identifying the nefarious thieving qualities and the worst aspects of Ned, that actually she became part of the people who obviously survived the whole thing, as opposed to literally going down with the submarine.
Right,
okay. I did wonder what you were talking about. So that's enough to make me watch it, I suppose.
It wouldn't be a Disney movie without a cute animal.
I love a cute animal, you know me. anything to do with animals. No, but I'm definitely going to watch this particular film. Seems like a classic from what you're...
Oh, it's an absolute classic, yeah.
Okay, there we go. I will definitely watch it.
Okay, and interestingly enough, Herbert Lom takes on board the role of Nemo in Mysterious Island. Should you feel moved to actually watch that early 1960s version, which is in some ways a kind of sequel in the same way as the original text, Mysterious Island was a sequel several years later to 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. So Nemo in so many ways is still with us, still actually raising those issues from the depths of the ocean and so on. Let's go to Jessica then for the summing up in this side of things. Jessica, what are you going to score 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea?
So I think it's honestly a 10. Like, it's just so fun. And I enjoyed it so much. And I would gladly watch it again. Also, just as like as a fun fact that I wanted to share, that just a few years before this movie is set, the first submarine to ever sink a ship during a war happened, and it was the H.L. Hunley, it was a Confederate submarine, and the crew all died during it, and they were buried in 2004. And I thought that was really cool that it was just right before this book that submarines actually became like a war weapon. So, yeah.
Very good and very apt. And let's just hope that for the unfortunates who didn't get out of Afghanistan, they won't have to wait until the 23rd century to actually be buried. Otherwise, who knows what could happen on that basis. Just shows, obviously, you let these things pan out over time from that point of view. Still, not as much water in Afghanistan. Still, so it goes. Okay, so you're going for a 10 then, Jessica? Excellent. Jenny, what about yourself?
I think it's going to have to be a 9 or a 9.5 because I got to knock a bit off for Kirk Douglas. I'm sorry.
Who would you have rather had in that role? Would you have had somebody else in that role?
I'd rather have had that role not there. Just nobody. Just get rid of it. The sea lion. I'd rather have had the sea lion in that role.
Yeah, but give the sea lion some lines.
Douglas would obviously go on to actually take part in the Vikings and, of course, become the father-in-law of Catherine Zeta-Jones. So there we are. Just goes to show. Continue to carry on until relatively recently as Hollywood royalty. So 9 from yourself, Jenny. I'm actually going to go for an 8 because, again, I thought there were areas there that kind of didn't quite work for me. And I shared sort of the concern about, as Pamela said, why did they actually put in that whole musical sequence of Whale of a Tale? Because one suddenly sort of thinks, hang on, we're getting into a different line entirely here. But never mind. Philip, what about yourself?
I think I'd go along with that. I'd say a 9, solid 9. And I think that there were one or two. I've never particularly been a big fan of Kirk Douglas, always been over the top with that kind of over-ego and the chin and all that. I've never been a big fan. But on the whole, I thought it was a good rip-roaring tale and I loved every minute of it. And when I first watched it, I didn't kind of understand all the forward-thinking hope for the future stuff. You know, that didn't really sort of come into my mind. It was really about, you know, beating the baddies, beating the squid and all that stuff. That's what in my first, you know, watching of it. But the second time round, I thought it's just a great classic period piece. And wonderful. So a 9, yeah. And that musical bit section was just awful. And it was almost as if some producer said, we want some music in this, you know. And they went, no, but you can't have a music. You can't have the director say, you can't. He said, yeah, if you won't get the money otherwise. What? I'll put music in then, you know. I mean.
Interesting enough, Gregory Peck was being seriously considered at one stage to actually take on the ball on board the role of Nemo. It'd be interesting or intrigued to see what Peck would have actually made of the whole
sequence. He would have been wonderful. I'm quite sure.
Okay.
But it was James Mason's film, so a 9. Yep.
Precisely. He'd go on to be Rommel, of course, and take part in Lolita, but there we are.
Indeed, and he said, the front will resound to the sound of 1,000 guns. Do you remember that when he was Rommel?
He does his James Mason shtick. That's the important thing.
It's the only opportunity I've got.
Pamela, would you actually go down the line of a 9 or would you go down my 8 or are you going to support Jessica and say it's a 10?
Got a whale of a tale to tell you, lads. whale of a tale or two about the flapping fish and the girls I've loved on nights like this with the moon above. A whale of a tale, and it's all true, I swear by my tattoo. There was Mermaid Minnie, met her down in Madagascar. She would kiss me any time that I would ask her. Then one evening, her flame of love blew out. Blow me down and pick me up, she swapped me for a trout. Got a whale of a tale to tell you that, a whale of a tale or two, about the flapping fish and the girls I've loved on nights like this with the moon above. A whale of a tale, and it's all true, I swear by my tattoo. There was Typhoon Tessie, met her on the coast of Java. When we kissed, I bubbled up like molten lava. Then she gave me the scare of my young life. Blow me down and pick me up, she was the captain's wife. Got a whale of a tale to tell you that, a whale of a tale or two, about the flapping fish and the girls I've loved on nights like this with the moon above. A whale of a tale, and it's all true, I swear by my tattoo. There was Harpoon Hannah, had a face that made you shudder, lips like fish hooks, and a nose just like a rudder. If I kissed her and held her tenderly,
held her tenderly,
there's no sea monster big enough to ever frighten me. Got a whale of a tale to tell you that, a whale of a tale or two, about the flapping fish and the girls I've loved on nights like this with the moon above. Whale of a tale, and it's all true, I swear by my tattoo.
She's gone for 9.25, I think, the score's there. Yeah, 9.25.
Because of James Mason and Peter Lorre, and because of the seal, and it's not a 10, it's not even a 9.5, because of, yeah, Kirk Douglas, he just kind of ruined it. Like, it's such a shame, you know? But it is a classic, and zooming way back is a realization that this is just a fantastic movie, you know. And there's also that that bit of nostalgia, right? You know.
Yes. Yes.
So 9.25.
Okay, Tessa. On the basis of what you've heard, do you want to sort of give a score on the line of what you saw for the trailer?
Yeah, I'm going to go with you, Alex. I'm going to go with an 8, just because I haven't seen the full length film, so it might change my mind once I've seen the full length. So I'm going to go with an 8.
The fact that it's Robin's Christmas movie of the year, I always thought it was a Wonderful Life, your Christmas movie, Robin. But clearly, this is another sort of one which is actually up there. I suspect
Christmas
you might be...
Eve is not Christmas Eve unless I've watched 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. Aww. And my family will tell you this has been going on not for years. It's been going on about 2.5 decades.
Good grief.
So they just leave me alone here in the study, watching the TV behind me, and you know, I'm in hog heaven. The song, when I first heard this song, when I first saw it on TV in the 80s, I thought, you know, what are they doing? But really, it's a Disney movie, and if you didn't have the song to lift the mood, and some of the comedic interludes, you just be left with an overbearingly grim film about a mad scientist who kills hundreds of people, which is possibly the least Disney thing I can think. Now, there's a fine tradition of the Toccata in Fugue being played by mad scientists. I mean, Boris Karloff and Bela Lugosi played it many times, as did the Phantom of the Opera. So, you know, he's chosen his music very, very well. We've got the first nuclear submarine, which never once launches a torpedo. Think about that. But overall, my rating for this, and with in tribute, actually, to Esmeralda, I am going to give it my seal of approval and give it a 10.
There you go.
It had to come, Robin. It had to come.
it's lifted it off the depths into the joy of wonderment. Thanks to Tessa, Leanne Snart, Pamela Suman, Jenny Bill, Jessica Burtis, Philip Hurdwood, special guest contributor today, and of course Robin Pierce. Next week, for those people who are actually sort of feeling as though there wasn't enough squids today, don't worry, because squids will be back once again. We'll be squids in when we actually go off the coast of Norway, focusing on the episode of Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea's first season, The Village of Guilt. So those wonderful words, giant squid astern, sir, might be followed through with respect to that. All we need to do now is simply say those wonderful words, keep on resonating.